crazy day. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. And speaking of crazy, there's all sorts of things for us to go over today with regards to the opiate epidemic. This is the big talk of the town in Washington, D.C., with President Trump putting together a opiate addiction crisis team composed of Governor Chris Christie, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, former Attorney General of Florida Pam Bondi, Governor Charlie Baker out of Massachusetts. I mean, this is an all-star lineup, Dr. Mitch. What do you think about this opiate task force?
I would have rather he just threw a dart at a map.
Not
because if you had a random sample of people, they couldn't be worse than this. Oh my God, Jeff Sessions, Chris Christie, are you kidding me? No, I'm pretty disappointed.
Not exactly who we'd want to see. The first bit on this I wanted to discuss has to do with a CBS News report where they spoke with the DEA chief, Chuck Rosenberg, and the quote they get out of this is that opioids, quote, "it scares the hell out of me," and they're making a big scare about the opiate epidemic. It reminds me of how in the 1980s there was the big scare about crack and crack babies, and that helped to depress support for marijuana reform. What do you make of the DEA head's comments, and do you think it'll have a similar chilling effect like it did in the 80s?
I gotta admit, I think of the opiates as less alarming than crack. They're hitting the white people, though, and the wealthy people, so we better be super scared. I don't think the stats are off the way some of the crack baby stats were hitting the press in the 80s, but I gotta admit, call me paranoid stoner, I do think that the alarm about this, coupled with this nonsense we're hearing about how cannabis could help, or not help in that case, really does make me suspicious.
There was the reporter who did the story at CBS News. His Twitter account, Tony Dukapil is the man's name. He tweeted out after the report got through social media, he tweeted out in response to it, "I also asked DEA Chief Chuck Rosenberg if marijuana legalization had pushed the cartels toward more heroin sales. His response, maybe." Is there a fear here that if we took marijuana away from the cartels, so now they're responding by upping the production of heroin?
Well, they sure as fuck ain't growing coffee.
Yeah, I guess not.
I mean, if they're going to cut out, somebody's main source of economic good life, I can't imagine they wouldn't either turn to coca or opiates. And right now, opiates certainly seem to have a market.
The other concern here is how they're trying to tie the idea of this opiate epidemic as being part and parcel with the problem of the gateway drug. Marijuana is this gateway drug that's leading people to that. I have a clip here that I wanted to play, and we'll get your take on this. This was at that opiate crisis key hearing that took place the other day, and this was the mother talking to President Trump, Governor Christie, and Attorney General Sessions.
Unfortunately, my son OD'd after having been clean for 10 and a half months, OD'd on a drug that was laced with fentanyl. So,
which is getting worse and worse. I hear it,
yes.
Getting just out of control.
So Carlos started smoking marijuana when he was 15 and a half years old. And for him, and he'd be the first to tell you this, it's absolutely for him a gateway drug. It led to heroin, cocaine, crystal meth. At 18, when he was a senior in high school, with months to graduate, he had a crystal meth overdose.
So how can we respond, when a mother is speaking like that from the heart about her dead son and calls out the gateway drug theory? How do we respond without coming off as crass or insensitive?
That's just it. So we have to begin with an acknowledgement that we're all absolutely, despondent about her loss. And we definitely are on the same page as far as wanting to prevent drug-related harm. That said, generalizing from a single case about literally anything may not be very logical. For every kid who started at 15 and a half and ended up on heroin, I know a kid who started at 15 and a half and ended up going to college, paying taxes, and living a delightful life. So the fact that we don't get to weigh those cases as heavily as her case shows a logical error that is hard to explain, in part because public schools are so poorly funded. So this really is part of a much bigger educational problem, and I do feel like, as heartfelt as all that stuff sounds, it really doesn't hold up if you think about, would I generalize about a single case to anything? And that may be our way to finally get inside people's heads about this.
One last bit on the opiate crisis here. We've been touting the stats recently, the studies, the surveys that have shown fewer opiate overdose, fewer deaths, fewer prescriptions in the states with medical marijuana access. But now comes across my desk the study that says women with opioid addiction who use cannabis will do worse in methadone treatment. This seems pretty complex. I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, what we're really seeing here is cannabis use may be a proxy for low socioeconomic status on these kinds of things. So I'm not crystal clear if they covaried these things out correctly, and I'm quite sure these women weren't randomly assigned to use cannabis. So I'm afraid what they're finding here is that a subset of women who happen to be poor and using cannabis are probably driving this effect to make it look like they're less likely to do well in the opiate methadone-based treatment programs.
Interesting. All right, let's shift gears now from the look at the opiate epidemic to the use of medical cannabis to help our veterans who are suffering from PTSD. We've covered the story of Dr. Sue Sisley going through the trials and tribulations along with Rick Doblin and the folks at MAPS to be able to get the first FDA-approved study of whole plant cannabis for veterans with PTSD. The news we get today, some sad news, Johns Hopkins school was part of this test, and now they've dropped out, and I was wondering if you could tell us any more about that and what this may do to hamper or delay the testing.
I mean, the sad part is every university relies heavily on federal funds, and they're all peeing in their pants right now, wondering what do they have to do in order to hang on to that cash. And right now, Hopkins is trying to play it safe in hopes of not infuriating the National Institute of Health and basically the whole Trump administration, so they can hang on to what are literally millions of dollars that have been funding their research for the last few decades. And I understand the playing it safe, but I had really hoped they would take a stand here because this has already been approved by the ethics boards. The funding is not federal funding. There's independence as far as these labs are concerned when it comes to doing this. And the empirical support is as close as it could be without being definitive proof. We've got tons of really outrageous self-report data that just suggests that, you know, without this plant, a lot of these guys would have committed suicide by now, and compelling work from my lab and labs all around the country saying, look, the key symptoms that are problematic for PTSD definitely respond well to specific strains of cannabis. So it just breaks my heart, and the fact that it's really all about the cash makes me extra disappointed.
So with Hopkins out, they were the ones on the East Coast, like Baltimore, I think it was. This just leaves Arizona school, is that correct?
There was going to be some work at University of Pennsylvania. Hmm. And basically the guy who was on that faculty, I'm understanding that he's, you know, experiencing a lot of frustration with trying to get this kind of work done, and they end up working for, you know, some California or in cannabis company instead to, you know, try to do the sort of thing he wants to do and make a decent living.
Wow. All right. Now, also with respect to that story of Dr. Sisley and the PTSD study, she had complained that the cannabis she was receiving from the University of Mississippi, Dr. El Soli's pot farm there, was substandard, not high enough THC, was laden with all sorts of gunk and nasty stuff that they didn't want to give to the veterans. And now there's been a response, an op-ed that was published that says the criticism of the University of Mississippi marijuana's quality was unfair. I've seen it, Dr. Mitch. What do you think?
I mean, if Irvin's is any indicator, it is not anywhere near as good as the cheapest trash I've seen in Washington State. So I really don't know what he's saying about these 27 varieties. And you'll note that nowhere in that op-ed does he say, by the way, here's our percent THC. Because last I heard, they had an 8% strain, and they were acting like it was God's gift to cannabis, when I really doubt there's a dispensary in town that is selling anything as low as 8%.
Well, the 8%, wasn't that my father's Woodstock weed that Kevin Sabet's always telling me about?
Sad but true.
My goodness. All right, a final bit of science here, but before we close things up, I want to remind everyone that if you want to get your questions directly to Dr. Mitch, you can do so through email by emailing 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. This last story, interesting for us science nerds, that the scientists have cracked the code, the genetic code of terpenes in the cannabis plant. I'm just wondering, aside from this being cool from a nerd perspective, what does this mean for consumers? Are we going to get more standardization, maybe get away from strain names and such?
It wouldn't surprise me if we also have some pretty good indication ahead of time of whether this is going to be a laughing strain, a pain strain, a sedating strain, a stimulating strain, simply because we'll know, you know, is it linalool, is it limonene? We'll at least have a good guess for how's it going to smell and how's it going to taste.
Well, that's good news. One of the considerations I've always had is that, you know, when I travel the country, if I stop into a Subway sandwich shop, I know what I can get. It's generally the same ingredients, but from state to state, when you're shopping for marijuana, it's different from state to state, different even from strain to strain.